But the origin of pleasure, an interesting topic. Does pleasure come from the body and the senses, or does pleasure come from the soul? So we, of course, advocates of bhakti yoga, we say, generate Krishna, be happy. So that means that's a spiritual practice, shravanam, kirtanam, smaranam, Krishna kirtan, Krishna jap. This chanting and glorification of the Lord, this is what souls do in the spiritual world. This is soul activity, soul food. And liberated souls and spiritual bodies, siddhadeya in the spiritual world, sing the glories of the Lord throughout the day and night. No matter what they're doing so many things. Churning yogurt into butter and harvesting crops and picking fruits and making garlands and cooking. I'm doing so many things. But all the time they're singing about Krishna, Krishna Murari, Vamshidari. So we understand that pleasure is a byproduct of purity. When we become pure, then we can actually experience the Atma. And then in the Atma, when the Atma becomes connected with Bhagavan, Nityananda Bhagavan. Bhagavan is Nityananda. Always blissful, eternally happy and joyful. He's Lila Purushottam. He's always enjoying Lila. So this is the Supreme Personality of God. So the purpose of yoga is to purify the mind. When the mind is impure, full of illusion and falsity, the mind makes one think that he's the center of existence. And in that state of illusion, then the soul is forced to stay in the material world. So there's two things, illusion and reality, truth and falsity. So what is reality? Bhakti, love, devotional service to Krishna, this is the reality. This is the natural consciousness of the soul, the energy, the feelings, the mood, the outlook. Probably compares it to water, rainwater. Consciousness is like rainwater, at least in the old days, before acid rain was there, full of nuclear fallout. The rainwater was considered very pure, and even today, in the countryside, the plants really thrive when the rain falls. There's a special shakti in rainwater. When you do a boring and you get some groundwater, and maybe so-called sweet water, as they say in India, or good, clean water, and the plants and grass and trees, they grow to some extent, and you can see that. You can measure the growth rate with that daily watering of municipal water or boring water. As soon as it rains for a few days, the growth rate is three times more. Tremendous. There's so much shakti, so much invisible shakti in rainwater. Water is water. You look at it, it's clear, it's colorless, clear, tasteless, basically. Look, rainwater and municipal water appear the same in casual observation, but the effect is quite different. That you can measure, that's quantitative. Because rainwater, they grow like anything. So that means that inside the rainwater, there's some kind of special shakti, special power, special shakti, growth shakti, jivan shakti, life energy. Some life energy is in that rainwater. So we can see in ourselves in our garden that when it rains, things really grow. Every day we're watering the banana trees, and they hardly grow at all. Every few weeks, maybe one leaf comes out with the regular so-called sweet water. As soon as it rains for 3 or 4 days, they grow 4 or 5 leaves. And it grows 3 or 4 inches taller. Amazing. It's like a miracle. So this is rainwater. So Prabhupada said consciousness, original consciousness, this pure consciousness, the spiritual consciousness is like rainwater. It's pure. It's powerful. It's alive. It's living. It's clear. It's transparent. Unadulterated. But then when that rainwater falls down to earth and mixes in with the dirt, becomes muddied. Mud, the clay or minerals of the earth become mixed in. So when that rainwater falls on the ground and you pick it up, it's all muddy water. It doesn't taste, it's not the same taste, not the same effect. It's diluted, it's contaminated with the mixture of mud and other clay and other substances on the earth. So that's what happens when the soul mixes in this body. The pure soul, pure consciousness mixes, the pure natural consciousness of the soul, original consciousness, when it's stuck, the soul is stuck in this body, it mixes with this body, which is the modes of nature, a combination of sattva, raja, and tamagun. So then the soul becomes adulterated, becomes contaminated by association. Not the soul, really, but the consciousness. Just like the air. The air is carrying aroma. The air is the air. The air is just air. But then if it passes over a stool field, the air smells like stool. You can't say, oh, the air is contaminated. No, the air is... We say like that, the air is contaminated, but the air is air. It's neutral. But it's carrying the smell of stool. Now it passes over a rose field on the bank of the Yamuna. There's so many rose fields, rose gardens. And the air smells like... It's carrying that aroma. So the consciousness is carrying the aroma of its association. The consciousness, like the air, is the consciousness is the natural. So Prabhupada says the original consciousness, the uncontaminated original consciousness of the soul is Krishna consciousness. This is natural, which means service to Krishna. So the practice of yoga, different yoga practices, yama niyama asan, yama niyama asan, pranayam, dharana, pratyahara, dharana, dhyanam, Juvana, Smriti, and Samadhi, these different steps in the yoga ladder that are meant to purify the materialistic mind of its tendency to grasp at its own pleasure. The mind is always seeking pleasure, pleasure seekers, pleasure seeking. So the materialistic person is carrying heavy baggage of material desires. Oftentimes we say that everyone in this world is in prison. Of course, Durga, the material world, is considered a prison. But we're prisoners of our senses. The soul is imprisoned by the senses. The senses, our desires, our material desires, are forcing us to act. So there's many, we have so many unlimited desires and so much conditioning we grow up with, so many slogans, so many phrases that are thrown at us by our so-called well-wishers, our parents, our guardians, our friends, our teachers, and they chant these slogans. You're the greatest. You're so intelligent. Oh, you're a Brahmin. You can do it. You should be an Acer. Achieve, succeed. Or if you don't study, you will never be able to be, never become anything. You'll be a failure in this world. How will you get money? How will you survive? You'll starve. You have no friends. You have no clothing. All these things. You're not able to accomplish anything. You're the worst. So our mind is always reacting to these chants. And it's controlled by this conditioned pushing toward different aspects or against different aspects of the material nature. Now Krishna says that this is the cause of bondage, attraction and aversion. He says that the yogi, he should be free from attraction and aversion. This is Krishna's statement. Krishna's telling this in Bhagavad Gita. And Prabhupada often quotes this verse out, Icha dvesha smutena dvandamayana bharata. Sarvutani Samoha Sarge Yanti Parantapa. 727 Gita. Icha Dvesha Samutena Dvandva Mohina Bharata. Icha and Dvesha, desire and hatred. Hatred means aversion. Icha and Dvesha means love and hatred. Icha means desire. Attraction and aversion. Desire, attraction, aversion, hatred, or envy. So he says all living entities are born into this material world, into delusion, bewildered by dualities arising from desire and hate. Sarvabhutani samoham. Complete bewilderment, complete delusion. Sarvabhutani, all living entities. Sarga Yanti Parantapa. They go. Sarga, Sarga, Sarga means creation. Icha Dvesha Samutena, Utena, arising, like Uto. Uto, Uto, Utena means to arise, to get up from. So this illusion comes from that dwanda. This is a duality. This illusion comes in two forms. Love and hate. Oh, I love this. Oh, this is really nice. I like this. Oh, this is very good. I hate peace. I don't like. Oh, I hate peace. Oh, don't give me peace. Oh, I hate peace. This is Icha Dvesha. So our mind is always reacting, is always going towards material aspects of material nature or away from it. And Krishna blames us. He says that attraction and aversion binds us to the material world. We shouldn't be attracted to anything and not avert. We should be equipoised, neutral. Of this, I'm talking about the material world. Spiritual world, we should be fully, completely attracted to Krishna. Krishna is all attractive. Attracted to his name, attracted to his fame, attracted to his lila, his holy dham, his devotees, his prasadam, his chanting, his service. Everything about Krishna we should be attracted to. We aren't, but we should be. The process of yoga is to become attracted, to become purified. Sukadeva Goswami and practically every spiritualist and every transcendentalist that ever walked the face of the earth, they're always telling their followers to get free from material desire. Jesus told the fishermen, he said, lay down your nets and follow me. So nets means maya jal. Jal means net. Shadira vidyajal tutendriyata hekal jivlevasaya sagare tarvajajivaiti. They say, shadira vidyajal. Vidyajal means a network of illusion. This material body is a network of ignorance in the sense. Is a network of ignorance in the senses or. This material body is a lump of ignorance in the senses or a network of illusion leading to hell, like this. Maya jal. Shalira avidya jal. Jatendriya dehekal. So he says, lay down your nets. Give up your maya jal. Give up your attachment. You're in the net. That's interesting. They were in the net back 2,000 years ago. Jesus was telling all his followers to get off the network. All the fishermen were on the net. He says, lay down your nets. Cancel your accounts to the internet. Follow me. Have faith in me. Give up your attachment and aversion. So all the transcendentalists, they recommend that we should rid ourselves of material desires. So this is yoga. Yoga is the whole process of disentangling ourselves, getting free from this material illusion. So material enjoyment, there's different degrees of material enjoyment. People are trying to find different levels of material enjoyment from different activities. For example, Prabhupada used to say this analogy. He would say that, what's the difference, water in a gold cup? You're eating water, drinking water in a gold cup or an iron cup. The taste of water is the same. You're eating food in a penthouse restaurant or you're eating on the street. Or a man is having sex in a fancy hotel and the dog's having sex in the park outside or in the street outside the hotel, in the hotel parking lot. That's the same activity. Both a pig and a gourmet are a connoisseur of food. They enjoy eating. But is their enjoyment on the same level? Does the dog that howls happily at the moon experience the same pleasure as a human relishing classical music? If one wishes to enter the spiritual realm, he must understand that it's not the senses that give one pleasure, but the soul, symptomized by consciousness that experiences life. The quality of one's sense perception is determined by the nature of the coverings over consciousness. The grosser the coverings, the less sensual refinement one has. The subtler the coverings, the more refined one's sensual experiences. The more refined one's senses, the higher one's capacity to feel pleasure. Ultimately, the soul, free from all coverings and experiencing its true unadulterated consciousness as Krishna's servant, is a true connoisseur of pleasure. The pleasure in the spiritual world consists of realization of this full unadulterated consciousness. As one's consciousness becomes finer and more pure, one begins to experience peace and then happiness. That's what we say, there cannot be happiness without peace. One who measures happiness in terms, if you measure happiness in external terms, like how many objects you have, you surround yourselves with so many costly, complicated objects and computers. And so we measure happiness that in terms of palatial property, speedy cars, sexual pleasure. They can never imagine or what to speak of experience the happiness in the higher material planets. It's described in the Bhagavatam in Satyaloka. People live there unbelievable, fantastic durations of life. And their experience is so refined that there is no traces of pain there in Satyaloka. In those topmost material planets, the transcendental yogis live in a subtle form, with their subtle material bodies functioning similarly to the physical bodies we have on this planet. Actually, they're in mental bodies. There's a very interesting description in some Puranas about. There's Maharlok, Janalok, Tapalok, Satyalok. These four planets. They have bodies. They can see each other. They talk. They embrace everything, but it's all in the mind. It's all mental bodies. There's no bones. There's no blood. There's no organ transplants. There's no lungs. There's no, but there's nose, mouth, everything there. It's all subtle. Just like you go to sleep at night and you're moving in a body and you're seeing people. You may even have experiences with man and woman in a dream. That's called the dream body. But is there some bones in that body? It's all in your mind. But there's experiencing, you're crying, you're laughing, you're loving. So many things are going on there. So this is a brief experience, and we call it a dream. But there are planets like this, Tapaloka and Satyaloka, their bodies are all like this, higher, mana, Buddha, Ankara. But they have some shape, and they can move, and they can experience. Whereas ghosts have subtle bodies, but they can't experience. They can only desire. They're in a subtle body also, but a very gross form, a gross form of mind. So they're just desiring, and they're frustrated because they can't fulfill their desire. So we have a gross body and subtle body, so we can fulfill our desires to some extent. And then the ghosts or bhutas or pretas, they have subtle body, but it's not a very subtle body like they have in higher planets. It's of this nature, of this world to some extent. It's just, there's pain and pleasure there. Not so much pleasure, but mostly frustration is described because they can't fulfill their desires. But in the higher planets, they have subtle body also, but of a much more refined and beautiful nature, and they experience pleasure. And there's no pain. They don't experience any pain there. Here in this world, we say, you have to accept the good with the bad. This is a place of sukh and dukkh. Everyone says, oh, if you get happiness, then you must get unhappiness. There's two sides to the coin of material world, earthly material world. This earth world, sometimes you're, oh, it's life is like this. Oh, listen, you can't, oh, daddy, can't people be happy all the time? The little child asks the father, oh, my son, the world is not like that. It would be nice. If you want this to be happy all the time, then you have to go to heaven. You have to go to be with God. You have to go to the spiritual world. Because this is the material world. This is the earth planet. And down on this planet, you have to accept the good with the bad. There's happiness in this. Sometimes you have a good meal, you feel happy. And next day you throw up, you feel sad. So this is the duality. Duality means some happiness, some sadness. But on a higher plane, then it's all happiness. There's happiness. That's why they say swarga sukh. The sukh is there. There's no pregnancy. To the last year of life, then there's pregnancy. There's no disease. There's no old age. There's death. You leave that position. There's no old age. No disease. So it's very attractive, very interesting place. But it's not eternal. So we think that these things will give us pleasure. So on the topmost material planets, the transcendental yogis live in subtle bodies. And their bodies function similar to our physical bodies, but they're all subtle, like mind bodies. The only anxiety they feel is compassion because they can perceive the misery, struggles, and disappointments of those restricted by the lower realms. So these higher beings are actually feeling compassion. That's why they often compile scriptures and even sometimes come to this world for preaching or helping. Like Lord, like Shiva, Shankar wrote so many nice poems and books and in the poem to Adastakams and different glorifications to help sadhakas meditate and think of the Lord and appreciate the Lord. So this is the happiness really comes from within. And that happiness of Krishna consciousness is something extraordinary that when you're in a wonderful kirtan with some pure devotee leading or pure devotees chanting, you feel some amazing happiness swells up within you, coming from some other plane, and saturates your whole being. You don't feel like you're part of the body anymore. You feel like you're in some other realm. So real happiness, the soul is actually the source of happiness. Prabhupada once said, all work is done in the mind. So even the materialists know that all so-called material pleasure, material pain is felt in is experienced in the mind, not the senses. So it's so that that mind is experiencing pleasure or pain because of the presence of the soul. So the soul is the actual enjoyer. The soul is the source of pleasure. And the soul can actually fall into a reservoir of pleasure. There's one small tract that Prabhupada used to distribute called Krishna, the Reservoir of Pleasure. Because Krishna is a reservoir of pleasure. He's enjoying moment to moment. So we're connected with Krishna by devotional service, and we can swim in a reservoir of pleasure. Eternal happiness, knowledge, and bliss. And the eternal service of Radha and Krishna in Vrindavan. This is the opportunity that human life affords. But we settle for these paltry physical pleasures which are come and go. They're fleeting, they're limited, they're temporary. They're fraught with so many side effects. Everyone talks about side effects now of these powerful modern drugs. And they often have side effects, very harmful side effects in various organs. They help on one side, but they break something down on another side. So this is, there's no side effects. Material pleasure has a side effect. The side effect of material pleasure is unhappiness, frustration, disappointment, and death. Like he once said that material life is like a 4D movie, right? We've heard of 3D movies, three-dimensional movies, but material life is like a 4D movie. Dissatisfaction, distress, dissatisfaction, disappointment, and death. But the soul, on the soul plane, or on the platform of the soul, and pure consciousness, when one is absorbed, rendering service to the Supreme Personality of God at the Supreme Consciousness, Nityo Nityananam, Chaitanas Chaitananam, Eko Bahunam, Yobedadatikam. Rendering service to the Supreme Lord in pure consciousness, original consciousness, Krishna consciousness, then one experiences real happiness, full saturation, mind saturated, heart saturated, body saturated, soul saturated, saturated with joy, peace and happiness. By rendering service to Krishna, one dives into a reservoir of pleasure and lives there forever.